gigabyte, kilobyte, terabyte, megabyte, all this stuff makes my brain mega hurts. Fortunately, someone is available to explain all this technobabble. Translating technobabble to English, your translation expert, Benjamin Rockwell, is here with Computer Talk Radio.
We've got so much in store for this week's Computer Talk Radio. Let me go through some of these different things we're going to be talking about. Keith Emcedor and I are going to talk iPhone cases. Marty, Roku USB sticks and a new Roku QLED Pro television. Steve Keske and I are going to talk about nanotechnology and some of the observations and impacts there. Dr. Doreen Galley, this week she went to Money 2020 and we'll be talking about some of the financial tech stuff that she learned there. Alfred Poor is back. Health tech is evolving quickly. On the IT Pro series, Renee, her company's laying off, so how does she upskill? I've got some guidance there. On the scam series, Braden asks, what is a zero-day vulnerability? Holly also has a question. Why are some websites slow on work computers but not on the home PCs? And we'll dive into that. We'll also discuss the strength of older folks in the IT business space. All of that on this week's Computer Talk Radio. Of course, if you miss any of that, you can go to the website computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com. And check out the podcast there. You can also reach out to us there. I will answer your computer questions, your technology concerns, whatever they may be. Just contact us today. Of course, you can phone me at 888-NERD, 888, that's 888-637-3888. Let's dive into the news from this past weekend. There were a number of different things that really caught my eye. One of them was an announcement from Amazon. Okay, let's back up. They announced, or we had the rumors initially in regards to a layoff, and those rumors were big. The rumors were 30,000 people, and that is, to us, that's a big number. For Amazon, well, I'll get into that here in a minute. The official number on Tuesday was 14,000 employees. Now, they were given 90 days notice, and they had options to go out and find new positions. And there's a whole series of severance packages and health care and other assistance and so forth. So, yes, really up front, it still sounds like a big, huge number. But I want to put this into a gently, very, very just gentle perspective here. Amazon employs over 1.5 million employees, and 350,000 of those are corporate. Now, those impacted, those are corporate employees. So this isn't even going to impact most of our deliveries or anything like that. When you look at that many people being corporate employees, that's just mind-boggling. So yes, even still, 14,000 people. It's a big number, but it actually represents about 4% of just the office workers, or rather office workers only. So yes, for them, I do feel for them. I understand this is really rough going into the holidays, and I feel for all of them. It does represent an indicator of some recent claims by Amazon of more investment in AI, and this bolsters their own admissions, their own statements that AI is going to take jobs away. So I want you to take away from this. A big takeaway here is this is something that could impact your job. AI, we've been talking about this for a while. And a lot of companies say, oh, no, AI isn't going to take any jobs. But as things shift around, there is a potential at times for jobs to be threatened. Is it going to eliminate all of our jobs? No, not likely. Is it going to eliminate whatever role you have? Yes, there's a higher possibility in some roles, lesser in other areas. I will tell you, Your local fast food worker, not likely to be replaced because robot chefs are still not going to be chefs. They're going to be automatons that really aren't going to have customer service skills, not for a very long time. Now, scientists have announced scientific evidence that we've already kind of known for a while. They have confirmed that our human eye cannot distinguish between 1440p and 8K resolution at 10 feet away. Now, let's talk about part of this right up front. 1440p is a resolution that is a little bit lower than 3K resolution. It sits there between 2K and 4K resolution. 4K resolution is really where a lot of our broadcast has gone. A lot of your Blu-ray discs and whatnot. So rounding up from the 1440p, we can start talking about your 4K screen. This statistical scientific evidence, however you want to put it, shows that if you're greater than 10 feet away, the need for your television upgrade for resolution, it's no longer a factor. You don't need an 8K screen. And to that extent, 8K these days is only available from Samsung. So we're going to see a shifting in how our investments are going to be going as we near the peak buying season, which is right in that run up to the Super Bowl. There are other factors that we should be focusing on. Ignore the 8K screens. Start looking at things like depth of color, your contrast. Look at the options of OLED screens or QLED screens, depending on whether you want that starker black-white contrast or you want the more realistic, brighter colors. Now, we also need to be watching things like refresh rates, which is how fast your screen updates. And you may look into things like smart features, your streaming apps, your voice control, and also connectivity issues like more HDMI or USB ports. So this is kind of giving you guidance. And if you have questions, of course, reach out to me. Now, speaking carefully for the littler listeners, OpenAI released data this week that talks about how many users are struggling with mental health issues. The shocker that topped this was that over 1 million people each week are talking about the ultimate selfish final act each week to a non-living robotic responder. Yes, ChatGPT. This is kind of shocking, especially after some recent incidents that have been reported of these very same issues. Now, OpenAI is working to resolve this issue. They're gathering up mental health consultants and more, and they're adjusting other areas at the same time to the detriment of society. A recent announcement advised that soon adults would be able to have ChatGPT conversations that are best kept between we'll say loving husbands and wives in their private moments. Both issues should have everyone reviewing their own actions and taking measures to prevent falling into either of these bad places. Now, the last time we discussed a big valuation milestone, it was when Apple passed the $3 trillion market valuation. This week, they passed the $4 trillion valuation. That's huge news for them. That wasn't the biggest news of the week. A day later, fueled by the high usage of chips in AI and crypto, NVIDIA passed the $5 trillion mark for a short while. As an aside, the top seven are all tech companies. Microsoft, running around $4 trillion and running neck and neck with Apple. Alphabet, a bit over $3 trillion, and Amazon sitting at $2.5 trillion. It's an interesting world from what I grew up in, where tech was just the fascination of nerds and geeks, and today it's completely different. And this, of course, if you weren't aware already, this shows where our future is going. Now, I saw a lot of clickbait this week about Twitter, that the Twitter domain was going to be retired. It's really more of a move away from multiple options for multi-factor authentication, and X, if you use it, or at least if you're using multi-factor authentication in X, they're going to be asking you to re-enroll your security key with X.com instead of Twitter.com. This isn't a security thing or anything doom and gloom, as it's been considered X for so long, even if we tend to hold on to the old name for nostalgia's sake. They are sharing with everyone how to translate your YubiKey or other hardware passkeys over to the new settings. So search and be prepared if you're in the Twitter, I should say, X sphere. The news link at my website can also provide guidance. Check it out at computertalkradio.com. Coming up next, we're going to discuss the strength of older folks in the IT business space. That'll be next here on Computer Talk Radio.
Let's talk about on and off.
You mean like light switches?
Yeah, the original user interface device.
And you were there, right?
Hey, I'm not that old.
Yeah, you are. So on and off.
Yeah, only with no humans doing it, like...
But you and I both have our computers on CyberPower UPS systems.
Yeah, so we have power, but there's another on and off.
Oh, right. Online and offline.
You got it. Meaning another UPS at the cable modem and VoIP phone and Wi-Fi router.
And even a low-cost standby UPS can handle those. Better, of course, if it has AVR.
Right, so it doesn't have to hit the battery just because the line voltage drops.
Maybe it's a good time to mention the promo that saves $10 to $15. Details are at the CyberPower website.
And maybe you could put it on your website?
Oh, that's already done at computertalkradio.com.
You know, on and off, you take really good care of your listeners.
The website, computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com. I want to talk about the idea of IT being a field only for the young folks, for the people that are in their 20s and 30s, and not for people who are of my age. I am eligible for AARP at this point. That should give you an idea of just kind of a general range. I've been in IT now for over 30 years. So I am distinctly outside of the realm of the young folks in IT. And I want to start this off by reminding everyone of this comment that came from the 1984 presidential debates, where Ronald Reagan was asked if, at his age, 73 at the time, if he was too old to be president. And he said, "I will not make age an issue of this campaign. I am not going to exploit for political purposes my opponent's youth and inexperience." And that was a zinger. And the reality is we need a lot more older folks in IT. We need far more of the folks that have been around since the days of DOS, since the early days of Windows, back when Novell was around. We need a lot of people who've seen a lot of the evolution of IT over the years. Not less of them. We need more of them. And the reason for this is, there are a number of reasons that come along with this. Let's start off with just ethics. An older person is more likely to have positive work ethics that are crucial when dealing with customers, with coworkers, in a respectful and trustworthy manner. And the technology sector has been running in many different directions and has actually been ignoring the idea of ethics. And ethics are how we get ahead. Ethics, and in both in treating people ethically, but making sure that technology is being used in ethical manners, that is such a big, huge thing. I will throw out there, if Google and Facebook and all of their clamoring for more money had some ethical balance into this, we might not be so concerned about our smartphones listening to us, any of tech listening to us. They would say, there are some boundaries that should be in place here. We need to be thinking about this. And this is just one area, of course. When we start looking at the older folks out there, they really make for great role models and mentors. I will tell you that I have had some people mentor me over the years in various positions that I've been in. And an experienced worker, an experienced employee is going to be more confident. They have a better understanding of workplace politics, and that can serve as a mentor to younger workers. That's an intangible benefit for anyone. And companies that develop these mentor relationships, they actually enjoy lower training costs. They benefit from lower employee turnover rates. And this is a very key thing. People aren't jumping ship whenever we have these stronger mentors, because relationships get built up and people stay put a little bit longer instead of just chasing after the almighty dollar, chasing after all of these different glittery objects that are off in the distance that they may actually never reach. And that's really very good. I will also note that senior hires are coming along with a lot of different things that really help out. So if you're hiring someone who's been in a number of different companies over a very long career, they have extensive networks. And these networks can be utilized in so many different ways. One of the ways that I utilize my network is that, yes, I've got connections with all kinds of different people that I've built up over the years that I can rely on. I can ask questions. I can go back to someone that I haven't talked to in a while and say, hey, we did this back at this company. How did that right after we implemented this, how did that play out? And I can also say, hey, remember when we had this thing and it broke down and we fixed it? Do you remember what that fix was? Yes, I know it was an obscure thing. Oh, yeah, we did it this way. So that is one thing there that really comes into place. I can expand all of my troubleshooting skills by going back to things, and I can ask a lot of people, hey, this broke, how do we fix it? But I also have the advantage of coming to someone and I can say, look, I know this guy that I used to work with, and he is absolutely brilliant. He would be a great resource to come along with us. Your network, when you are 20, you're fresh out of tech school, is very small. You know a bunch of students who took classes. At my point, I know people who have done all kinds of different things in information technology, and that is something that really comes along with me. And then we get into the idea of dependability and flexibility. So folks who've been in the industry for a long time, they tend to stay on the job longer, and they are already ready to settle down. They're less likely to switch employers. And work-life balance actually frees up. I know that when we start talking about children around, that is something that people think we need to put more into the life of our children. And look, work-life balance still needs to be there, but it's a little bit more flexible for various things. And I am personally open to working, the odd weird shift, a late night to get an urgent project done and taken care of. And I also know that the stats are that people are living longer and healthier lives because they're staying active and engaged. And the idea of retiring at this point is it's a fun thought for me, but I also am thinking about the idea of working a little bit longer, not because I'm chasing after the dollar, but because I want to have something to do with my life. And that is something that a lot of seniors are doing these days. And I'm going to close out with this last item, and that is that seniors, any of the older folks in IT that have been around for a while, they have become very brilliant problem solvers. They've got that advanced critical thinking skill that is lacking in somebody who is fresh out of tech school. I've got better communication skills, and I know how to navigate through the workplace. I have skills necessary to perform the job, and therefore I'm going to require a lot less training than somebody who's coming along fresh out of school. No offense to any of those, but there is no amount of training that is available out there that can replace 20, 30, or more years of experience in the workplace. This is something that I wish more people would be realizing. And I keep hearing about how companies are, you know, they're targeting these 20 and 30 year olds because they can take advantage of them. But it's not going to do well over the long haul. If you're hiring, if you're thinking of hiring, think about the older person who has that longevity, that experience, and that ethical background that's going to help you get to a better place with your company. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
The phone number, 888-NERD-888. That's 888-6373-888. Keith Amsidor joins me now. And Keith, one of the big things that you and I have in common is our fascination for the various cases that we put on our phones.
And I thought you were going to say, like, we both have comparable preferences when it comes to the color palette of Apple's anodized aluminum colors.
I mean, both
in laptops and in iPhones.
I do like the midnight black, which you and I have discussed, and I do have the sky blue iPhone, which, although, you know, I may have this sky blue iPhone, but you have ribbed me countless times off air in regards to the fact that I have this beautiful color phone, and what is the first thing I do when I buy a phone? I wrap it in a black case.
Now, I will give you props. The case you've chosen is by a well-known case manufacturer of mobile phones, and that is Spigen. They make a good product.
Yes.
I have used their products historically in the past.
Mm-hmm.
That is until I discovered ESR. And ESR is a premium case manufacturer, and they make a case with a metal kickstand. And what's great about it is the kickstand will stand your phone up in either orientation, in landscape or in portrait mode. And when I first started using the kickstand case, I will tell you that the one that I was using was also a black phone, a black case on a colorful phone. But they now make the same case clear. So now the beautiful blue iPhone 15 Pro Max that I have shines through the entire case. And it's very easy to see that they've got the really cool blue color iPhone.
So I struggle with the idea of any of these clear cases because they yellow. And I just have a hard time with the idea of wandering around with a case that, okay, after 6 months, it looks kind of dingy. After a year, it is so very clear to me, no pun intended, that it is deteriorated to the point where it really needs replacement. So now the Spigen case I've got here, this is, I've had this for about a year and a half. Just because I've been kind of holding off, I held off to decide whether or not I was going to upgrade to the latest iPhone, and I still haven't made a decision there.
I was going to say, what's the consensus? Have you decided to go with somebody from the 17 line, or are you going to hold off and see if we get some wild new form factor in the next model year or two?
I am getting ready this Christmas to plunk down the money for a brand new Spigen case. I still haven't shifted. There is so little that entrances me about the iPhone 17. It's whatever. You know, that's kind of where I'm at. I mean, yes, it does. It will give me Apple intelligence, but from what I've seen with all of the AI these days, it's like, it's great if it's a feature, but when you put all of your eggs in one basket, you put all of your effort into AI and you forget about everything else.
It's not fully developed yet.
Yeah. And even then it's, you're right. It's not developed, but that's all their focus is. And I struggle with that idea.
Mm-hmm. Well, to your earlier point, the case that you chose is actually really cool, and you brought up a good point for having that particular case, is you've got a little slider on the back that is good for putting business cards in.
Yes, I love that feature. As a matter of fact, the last probably five cases I've gotten from Spigen have been this particular model with this iPhone and the previous one, because I do like putting business cards in there. You know, I 3D print my business, the business card, just a hair thicker, but that's good. Now let me just grab out this one, which is the case that I put on my iPad, and this is Urban Armor Gear. And
that's a little chunky for me.
No, it's actually really slimline on here.
It
looks chunky, but it is a nice slimline case. I've had some really beefy cases on some of my iPads over the years. And
well, before we get off of the Spigen case, I actually like the idea, even though I'm not using it. I like the idea of the case you're using.
Yeah,
because I frequently have to give out business cards, you know, for my Mac consulting practice.
Yeah.
And keeping business cards in your wallet can be a situation where the edges get banged up.
Yes.
And all of a sudden you're not making a nice presentation. So I can see the value in that. But for me, there's lots of opportunity to watch video throughout my day. I might be doing an iFixit something or other, and I need to, you know, have that screen with me in an orientation where it's not sliding down the back of a, you know, water bottle or something, and it just won't stand up on its own. So for me, the kickstand is important, but
you know, there are credit card sized kickstands that'll actually go right into your wallet.
Like but one thing I did want to point out is that it's not quite the expensive affair that it once was to buy a case for an older phone. You've got an iPhone 14 line, I've got an iPhone 15 model. And what I've discovered is that when I first got this computer brand, this phone brand new, I think I paid $20 plus for the case.
Yeah.
And as you said, it started to yellow and it wasn't showing the blue color through nicely. And so I actually went on Amazon to replace the case. Well, I went on Amazon to replace the case with another clear case.
Yeah,
identical model, same manufacturer. And because it's a 2-year-old model, now instead of paying $20+, I think I paid $7 or $8 for it.
Yeah.
So if you have to replace a yellowing case for the same model phone a few years later, I think people can expect to pay a few dollars less because it's no longer the current model.
Yeah, and that is something good. Yeah, you know, this is something that everybody should shop around for. If you've got a phone that's getting a little bit older, one of the biggest things I will suggest everybody, pop the old case on, clean the phone down very nicely, detail it, and put a brand new case on. You will feel a lot better. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell.
And I'm Keith M. Seador.
You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hi, this is Benjamin Rockwell. Most of us use digital cameras nowadays, but what do we do with those old pictures and slides in the back of the closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. If you have boxes of old slides, then you know they fade more and more each year. Let Legacy Digital scan them for you and stop the aging process dead in its tracks. You'll get beautiful 10-megapixel digital files, color-corrected and ready for printing. All this is done faster and cheaper than buying a film scanner and doing it yourself. Your files are then burned onto gold archival DVD discs where they will last for generations. Call right now, mention my name, Benjamin Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY. And tell them Benjamin sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
The phone number, 888-NERD, 888, that's 888-6373, 888. Marty Winston joins me now.
Well, it's Roku time.
Roku time? Okay.
Roku time. You know, I've used Rokus for years, and I love the way they can bring content to every screen in the house with some consistency between them.
Yes.
You want to watch Netflix, or you want to watch Paramount, or you want to watch Disney, or whatever you've got, and sometimes it inherits it from your cable system or somewhere else. Sometimes just paying a lot of subscriptions, but that's life these days.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Roku has always involved a little box with some source of power, sometimes a USB adapter.
Yeah.
And in the past, they've been, with a few exceptions, HD.
Mm-hmm.
But this season, Roku came out with USB-C sticks.
Okay.
They still take a USB port on the side, but now TV sets have that port, so you don't have to use another wall outlet.
Mm-hmm.
So for Roku, and remember that big projector for Rico with Roku, Roku gets skinny with a new series of USB-C sticks for watching in 4K. Even one nice model for 4K with HDR, high dynamic range.
Nice. Okay.
Now, I've got some Vizio TVs where those long sticks don't quite fit into the gap that Vizio left.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But if you really want a superb experience, pair a 4K HDR with a Rico 4K projector and let a Roku Rico rock you.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's move on. The Streaming Stick Plus and the Streaming Stick 4K.
All right.
Are really, really cool because of what they do. But what happens when you put those features right into the TV set? And for years, Roku had third parties build Roku branded TV sets with Roku integrated.
Yeah.
But now they're building their own.
Okay.
And I got in a Roku 65-inch 4K 120 frame per second backlit QLED Pro TV.
Okay, sounds very nice there. Yeah,
it's very nice. It's heavy. I mean, My wife and I tried lifting it, and I had to have our burly neighbor come and substitute for it. Big. It's big. You don't see much of a bezel. I mean, the bezel's deep, but it's the surround is almost not there.
Nice.
It's got dimming that responds to the ambient light level.
Okay.
Dolby Vision. It has a second edition voice remote that has backlighting, is rechargeable, and has a programmable key for the one that isn't from the factory. You know, from the factory, you always seem to get what, Apple and Disney and all that. I wanted Paramount on, so I used that other button to add Paramount to a
okay.
One.
All right. Yeah. Nice. So
Dolby Atmos surround sound 4.1 audio channels, and this without a bar. Sounds big. It's big sound. It even if you're mounting it flat on a wall, as we did with their mount, is magical. It has a configuration to tell you it's against the wall, so the sound audio profile reshapes itself.
Oh, okay. I'm liking that. All right.
All right. Now, it has four HDMI ports. The Roku is built in. You're not using any of those. Two of which are HDMI 2.1.
Mm-hmm.
It has a QAM input. You know what that means?
QAM. Not off the top of my head.
Bring your cable connection directly to the set. It'll tune them.
Oh, okay. Nice. Nice.
It's got Bluetooth 5.2. It's got Ethernet, Wi-Fi, SPDIF, a VESA 400 by 300 mount.
400 by 300. Now, that's interesting.
That's a big and heavy thing, so it makes sense.
I would normally think 4x4, but okay.
It works. By the way, with their mount, it is sturdy as anything I've ever dealt with. I could chin on it if I could chin, right?
Yeah.
It allows you to tilt the set out from the wall, and the set has struts that will hold it away from the wall, so you can be dealing with where cables go without having to worry about it. And cable keeper straps are integrated on the back of the set.
Nice. They've really thought this through.
Oh, yeah. It also has an ATSC tuner. So if you've got an antenna, it's going to get all of those cable cutting channels. I'm loving this. Hoisting the set up there.
Yeah.
You're only supposed to lift the set using the handles on the big plastic bag that surrounds it.
Okay, yeah.
Well, we could stand it up with that, but pulling it out of that big foam thing at the bottom of the carton was a challenge. Made it. Once up, well, I cheated. I put everything on while it was on by cutting slits in the bag. Then my neighbor came over. We got it up vertical. We got it onto a couple of chairs in front of the mount. Got it up onto the mount. Click, it's in. End of story. It was ready. Had to pull the power cable out, plug it in the wall, and the set just works. I mean, I'm loving it. The audio is like somebody tamed a boombox.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is the Roku 65-inch 4K set, QLED Pro, and it's about $600 online.
Nice. That's a good price point for that size.
It's an amazing price point.
With a Roku value built in and all of that. And that's with the mount, you said?
No, the mount is extra. Yeah, I don't know what the mount costs, but don't go home without it.
Yeah. Very cool. I'm definitely going to do a deep dive on that one. I like the idea of that. We need a new TV in one of the rooms.
Well, if your neighbor is stronger than mine, they also have a 75-inch.
There you go. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Marty Winston. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and just a normal person. Recently, though, it was clear to me that it was time to upgrade, but I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After searching around for 3 weeks, there it was, SiteGround. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their willingness to do things the right way. The SiteGround salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when a 32-ounce soda would do. These guys know WordPress, Joomla, and regular standard websites. These guys at SiteGround are awesome. SiteGround.com. Site, S-I-T-E, ground.com. The bad guys are out to get us. They're out to get you, me, and everybody they can. Braden asked me, why are zero-day vulnerabilities so dangerous? So let's unpack what a zero-day vulnerability is. So the idea of this is, how long has the vulnerability, the bug in the system, the item that can be leveraged against, we'll call it Windows for this case, how long has it been out? And how long has it been patched? And a zero-day vulnerability is something where this is a bug or a security hole that has been in this software, in Windows for this example, and it can be any software or operating system, it doesn't really matter. But it was previously unknown. Nobody knew about this. This has been out there. And the term zero day actually refers to the fact that the manufacturer of that software or operating system has had 0 days to react to the discovered vulnerability. It's never been reported before, and it is likely to be actively exploited right now. That's what's really big about this. Anytime we have a zero-day vulnerability out there, these are things that the hackers are looking at. All of the hackers. It's not like there's just one malware package out there that looks for all of these things. There's tons of these different folks out there that are looking to leverage any and all vulnerabilities they can. And where they're going to get the furthest, where they're going to have the most success in one of these without having to trick the user or anything like that, where they get actual access to the system, is when nobody knew about this beforehand. But it actually gets a lot worse than that, because as we move down the line, yes, it's going to get patched. But once one of these zero-day vulnerabilities is found and is exploited, what happens is those hackers share that exploit. They share the information regarding whatever happened there, and they start to leverage this even further. They all jump in, and they try to put their own attack against this zero-day vulnerability. The software, all the way along, can't protect itself against anything like this. And the update, it may take a matter of a week or two or longer for Microsoft or whoever the manufacturer is to go in there to patch it to protect your system from it. Now, yes, a lot of malware packages can recognize malicious code. They look around for different heuristics or patterns that are typical of the attack software. But it may be something that is so pernicious that it can sneak past the malware software, get into your system, and attack it like nothing has attacked it before. So yes, we talk about these zero-day vulnerabilities on a regular basis, and we are constantly aware of these, attentive to these, and hope that we never get hit by any of them. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio. So I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country. But many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows The Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. TheRadioFactory.com.
Gigabyte, kilobyte, terabyte, megabyte, all this stuff makes my brain megahertz. Fortunately, someone is available to explain all this technobabble, helping you gain the upper hand with your computer. Here is Benjamin Rockwell with Computer Talk Radio.
We are halfway through this week's Computer Talk Radio. We are radio's broadest look at computers, technology, and how they impact your life. Well, my life. All of our lives. This is a world that we spend some time just thinking about all of the things that are out there. Of course, the website, computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com. The phone number, 888-NERD-888, that's 888-637-3888. Reach out either place. Feel free to contact us with your computer questions, your technology concerns, whatever they may be. Steve Kesky joins me now. And Steve, what do you have for us this week?
Nanotechnology.
Okay, yes.
I'm going to a little sliver here. I said I don't want to really talk about nanobots because, you know, that's something totally different here.
Yes. Well, nanobots are still in the idea phase. It's science fiction kind of stuff. But nanotechnology is an interesting direction we're going in. And people don't realize we're already into a lot of different areas of nanotechnology. When we start referring to nanotechnology, all it means is dimensions are somewhere between 1 and 100 nanometers. Yeah. And that's a billionth of a meter, just so you know. That's really small stuff.
Really small. And you got to remember that the whole idea of this getting things really, really, really small started out when I was a teenager with a transistor radio.
Well, that was one evolution of it.
Yeah,
yes.
Well, you know, we were trying to get the things into smaller, you know, transistor radios, smaller things.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, and that was called micro technology.
Yes. Yes.
And now it's nanotechnology.
Yeah.
Well, ideas.
Yeah. Well, you're right. And the transistor radio, all of the transistors there fit in a matter of a few inches.
Yeah.
And today we're talking about the CPUs. If we're talking about the CPUs,
yeah,
on all of our systems, I have for years been down utilizing nanometer distances.
Yeah.
So when we start talking about some of the chips out there, we start talking about your CPU on your desktop or your laptop. It is generally in the sub 10 nanometer range for the distances that they're talking about. Mm-hmm. That is how small they're getting. That's a very exciting thing. That is something that is, we can't see that small.
Hey, you can't see a lot of stuff that's small.
Yeah.
I mean, I couldn't even get it when if it was really big, you know.
Well, yeah, legally blind. So what were some of the different directions and ideas that come to mind when... Well,
they were talking about, when I was watching a documentary, they were talking about, okay, using nanotechnology,
mm-hmm,
to make wires thinner and stronger than they are now, so
yeah,
that when you have a spacecraft going up, you know, weight is the thing, you know, you got to watch the weight.
Sure, yeah.
So if you got wires all over that particular rocket, that are now down into the nano area.
Mm-hmm.
Look at how much weight you don't have to push.
Sure.
Now,
yeah. And so those wires that are in those smaller ranges, those are used for sending signal.
Yep.
Not necessarily sending large amounts of voltage. And no. There are many applications throughout. And of course, there is a tricky trade-off there. When you start getting small, very small wires, are they going to be able to hold up to the rigors of launch, of getting up to space? So there's a lot of science behind that. I love that you're going in this direction.
Well, it was another thing that they were talking about is using that nanotechnology in creating fibers in such a way that if, say, you have a solar panel or anything up out in space, well, you know, little bit of dust going through which could really create havoc.
Yes. Yeah, right? Very
so
true.
They were talking about, how about self-repairing nano-type technology?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that now, if that piece of dust goes through, that screen would actually repair itself.
Yes. And we are seeing different things that are going in that direction. Self-repairing is a concept that I am very interested in watching. And we start seeing this in very practical areas for all of us.
Oh, yeah.
Self-repairing covers for your smartphone. A matter of, we're starting to see the idea of self-healing applications where they detect problems and they're designed to resolve those problems without requiring a reboot, without requiring stopping it all and starting it all up again.
Yeah.
And that's some exciting area as well. But in the realm of nanotechnology, this is, you're very right. It's an exciting direction.
Yeah, yeah. And not only the repairing of that, they're talking about, hey, you want an aircraft to be lighter, to be faster.
Mm-hmm.
So why not use a lot of technology, nanotechnology, in creating the materials necessary for that, all the different pieces and parts of an aircraft.
Yes. And we can look at some of the, it's really, there are so many different directions. Okay, so for aircraft and spacecraft, the idea, one of the big areas we've got, of course, is shrinking the chips down. To give you an idea, I have sitting on one of my shelves that is in my office, I've got a computer that has the same processing power that they had in the space shuttle which was developed a matter of whatever it was, 7-8 years prior. And that is all the computing power. Now, that computer was from 1985. Everything I have will run rings around it. Everybody these days, everybody, if you have a smartphone, you have a cellular phone, it probably, not a smartphone, but, some of these, some of the various mid-grade flip phones,
yeah, the old flip
from
phone.
Any time in the last 20 years, those have a greater processing power than what it took for us to put man on the moon. And that's exciting stuff. And for every single airplane that's out there, yes, and spacecraft is far more important. But if you can reduce down the weight of all of the different computing instruments in there, that the navigation, the controls, all of that, you are going to save money on the fuel. And for space, it's a far more dramatic thing because they talk about the cost per pound to put it into orbit.
Yeah, and the other big thing is commercial aircraft. I mean, yeah. you could reduce the weight of an aircraft, or in my estimation, when I was looking at, was reducing the weight of the actual materials to make the aircraft.
Sure, yeah.
The exterior, look at how much less fuel it's going to take to actually fly from here to wherever.
Yeah. And they've looked at a lot of these different things. The weight of the paint. A number of different airlines looked at that for a while. Just the weight of the paint on a whatever it is, 787 or 747. Whatever. It's 1,000 pounds, 1,500 pounds, whatever it is. Well, that's quite a hefty amount of weight. That's a matter of a number of passengers worth of weight and their luggage. So,
and
yeah.
That's not leaded weight either.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. That's Steve Keske. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. You have a couple of those new carbon open frame racks from CyberPower, right?
Yeah, I love them. I configured a 25U to 40 inches deep, about twice as deep as a regular rack, and put more than a dozen peripherals in it.
You know, I saw your article about it. I can't believe it's not clutter.
And my 45U carbon rack, that's also 40 inches deep, will hold a ton of networking and control systems, the network video recorder.
Holy screwdriver, rack man!
You're getting one of their gorgeous enclosed racks soon.
Oh yeah, the 24U. Bigger than their wall mount carbon racks, but smaller than their tall boy.
Did you see what's happening with carbon on the CyberPower website?
Oh yeah, the promo, 10% off all their racks and rack accessories through the end of September. I put a link up at computertalkradio.com. computertalkradio.com. The website, computertalkradio.com, computertalkradio.com. That's how you can reach out to me. You can check the podcast. You can, I put the news up there. This is a great way for you to interact here with the show. Again, computertalkradio.com. We will answer your computer questions, your technology concerns, whatever they may be. Dr. Doreen Galley joins me now, and Doreen, you went to Money 2020 this past week. Now, 2020, we're in 2025, and I already know the answer to this, but you should probably explain that.
As in 2020 vision, right? So you want 2020 vision on money. It was the USA edition in 2025. It's actually a very large global fintech conference. And it's held at the Venetian. And when you get into Expo Hall, they had this large pink carpet that you can follow the pink carpet road instead of the yellow brick road. They had the pink carpet road around.
Okay.
It's kind of laid out like a city that wasn't planned.
Why pink, lost. Though? I would think it would be green. I mean, the color of money.
I'm not sure, actually.
Okay.
But it definitely stands out and changes. But it really dresses up and makes it really cheerful. They even had this like 360 camera thing up front that you could take that has this camera that zooms around you and you could dance and do funny thing. And it created a snippet you can send to your friends to go, yay, I'm at. So it was just part of the fun, silly environment.
Sure, sure. Yeah.
Maybe globally pink is a good luck color.
I have no idea. That's a very good good approach to it. So I'm sure you guys talked a lot about or you saw a lot about cryptocurrency, digital currencies, and things like that. What was the big huge hit in that direction?
Oh, absolutely. There is a lot of talk on crypto and on banking with crypto. Although one of the interesting things, I remember when we spoke back at HR Tech, I shared about a tech where you can get paid in stable coins.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I'm starting to get some, I don't know how comfortable I am with it. You know, I mean, obviously I don't give investment advice anyway, but, I just thought I would bring that up because there's something even about the name that when you call it stablecoin, it's trying to make you feel something that maybe it's not in and of itself.
Yeah, it's still,
it's still cryptocurrency. It's not fiat, which is the term used for money backed by the government. Mm-hmm. Right? It's not government backed. It's not federally insured. But what's interesting is all of these banks used to use and traditionally use something called core banking. Mm-hmm. And you get fees based upon these core banking things like ACH fees. But there are multiple, they call them rails. These rails are things they put money on, almost like they used to have those air chutes at a drive-in bank that you would go and you get your money through and it moves, right? Well, rails are kind of like the way they talk about when it's going from one financial institution to another financial institution. You have the core banking rails. There are additional rails that also work with fiat money that don't charge the same rates. Mm-hmm. But they don't use them because they like the delay and they like the charges. But then there's this whole additional exchanges going on for cryptocurrency. And so what's going on is these banks are having this bifurcated or highly segregated, siloed view of all of the money transactions and movements that they alone are having. So if you as a consumer feel like it's going on, the funny thing is the banks are having the same thing.
Okay.
And some of the banks are using technologies and vendors that are very tied into core banking and haven't expanded out quick enough, fast enough.
Okay.
There's like this one, forgot what it was called. The name just escaped me, but there's a currency, a payment exchange method down in Brazil now that's 40% of the market. Where credit cards are 44%.
Okay.
It's 40%. And so the methods of accepting payments, the methods of moving payments, all of this has significantly changed. And so they have highly siloed views. They're trying to do generative AI, but they haven't cleaned their data.
Yeah.
They don't have a single view of all their transactions. So needless to say, the video that has taken off, all of the videos, is a modern banking platform, right? So it has really taken off on the channel. It's a alacrity. It has like where you can do core banking and you can do crypto and you can do any rail you want.
Okay.
In one picture.
Okay, interesting.
In one view, and all one data view as well. And how do you manage your money and your profitability and your loss and make judgments of the best way to go when all of the terms, conditions, and methods and transactions and everything related to all these different ways banks are moving money doesn't come into one cohesive picture for themselves?
You know, okay, so here is my wish list, and I don't think there's anything that does this. I would love, just off of what you just described, I would love just a single pane, aka a browser window, that would tell me what I have in each of my bank accounts, what I have left over for the remainder on my mortgage, as well as track whatever, you know, we'll say Zillow, what is my there, what's in my 401k, what's in my Roth IRAs, what's in wherever, what's on all of my credit cards. You know, give me a good net worth and one screen.
So there are tools like that. I believe we covered on more likely in FinTech Meetup than in Money 2020, particularly in 24. So one of the things I advise people of is when I always try to get vendors that I haven't covered before.
Yes.
So just because I didn't cover a vendor this time at Money 2020 doesn't mean they were there. And I strongly encourage people to look at the write-ups and the analysis from last year's Money 2020 and this year and last year's FinTech Meetup as well. There's a lot of interesting technologies for fraud prevention and detection, but I always try to see if I can get a different vendor. And maybe it's a good time to point out, I mean, these are not pay for play.
Yeah. Right? Yes. None of these. Yes.
Not at all. Some of them, they ask me that. And I don't know how to explain this, but I want to cover what I find interesting and what I want to talk about and what I want to analyze.
That's exactly what I do. Yes.
Controlled by, oh, whoever decided to pay. I mean, I just think that would make such, it just would not be interesting to me. It wouldn't accomplish my goal from a research perspective.
Yes.
So literally, unless, I mean, I have like no sponsored videos on my channel either, though, which is really sad. But so no, nothing sponsored.
Yeah.
It's just interesting things that I found and came across.
So let me ask you. So at Money 2020, you're there, you're seeing all of these things. What was the thing? And I like to ask this a lot. What is the thing of what we're going to be doing with money in the coming 2 years, 5 years, whatever down the line that really struck you and said, hey, this is cool or horrifying, perhaps?
A little of both, right? So there was one of the session summaries I had of what they did at the arena where the Clippers pay.
Okay.
And how they have it seamlessly integrated with your face and payment and all of that. Which is great as long as that there is something in the middle of all of the system where you're still acknowledging the fact that I'm buying something, I'm acknowledging I'm buying it, and I'm paying for that, mm-hmm. right? If you ever extrapolated that technology into societies that maybe were not as free or share, you could use that technology to go, you're getting fined, and I'm automatically going straight to your bank account and doing that. And so you just want to make sure as you connect all of these systems that the controls are in place and that the person involved with authorizing the money is involved in authorizing each and every transaction.
Interesting. All right, Doreen, give me, if you would, please, the rundown of how people can check into your videos and your various whisper reports.
Absolutely. So our YouTube channel is at TBW Advisors, and the URL is the same. That's T for technical, B for business, and W for whispers, TBWAdvisors.com.
As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell.
And Dr. Doreen Galley.
You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Micro Center, home to all kinds of electronics and computer items, has over 20 locations across the country, and it's also available at microcenter.com. This is Benjamin Rockwell of Computer Talk Radio, and I live just a couple of miles away from my local Micro Center, and I've been shopping there for years. From Apple to Windows, they've got what you need. CPUs, got them. Screwdrivers and other tools, yep. Cables, televisions, scanners, projectors, cameras, they have it all. Micro Center is a place which fills your electronic needs. What are you looking for? Media centers, monitors, mice, MP3 players, media, modems, motherboards, memory? Those are just the M's. They aren't regional, but spread across our great land from Virginia to California. Each one is service and repair, in-store clinics, and business services, too. MicroCenter.com is their online store, a place where you can get your regular online ordering needs met. From the hobbyist to the professional, the brand name, or building it yourself, MicroCenter is your resource. Check out MicroCenter.com today. MicroCenter.com.
The website, ComputerTalkRadio.com, ComputerTalkRadio.com. That's how you can reach out to us. Scroll down where it says contact us today, and I will get back to you with answers to your computer questions and your technology concerns, whatever they may be. Alfred Bohr was with us recently, and we were talking about how to present yourself. But one of the things I found out about Alfred is you're a health tech futurist. And this is a field that is increasingly getting more and more attention from, I think, everybody. A matter of how, you know, yes, we can talk about like the inner cities and in city centers. But you know what? One of the things that comes to mind for myself, I'm in the exurbs of a major city. I am out where it turns into rural. So how is health tech changing for people like myself and maybe some of the listeners who may be in rural areas, they don't have a hospital that's 3-minute drive away or 5-minute drive away?
Excellent question. And so I'll start this off by sharing my 5 basic assumptions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And they are, number one, we don't have enough money in this country to pay for healthcare that everybody needs.
Okay.
And we don't have enough trained people. And I'm not talking about just physicians. I'm talking about physicians, nurses, aides, technicians.
Yes, yes, very true.
We don't have enough of those people to do the job.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not going to get more money, and we're not going to get more people.
Not anytime soon. It takes
one or two years
to get a doctor. Yeah.
Yeah. So for me, the fifth principle here is the only way out of the box is through technology.
Okay.
Okay, just as personal computers made it much more efficient for us to get our work done, technology is helping healthcare professionals deliver better healthcare outcomes at lower cost to their constituents, to their patients. And that, to me, is the fundamental issue. I just recently wrapped up working on a big project for LG Nova. They're one of the large accelerator programs for technology in the country.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I was chair of their health tech group to help put out a blueprint about how to promote innovation in health tech. So I'm kind of freshly dipped in all of this stuff. But the fact is, you know, you mentioned underserved populations, and that includes certainly people in sparsely populated areas, and that's a real problem. But a lot of people don't realize that often people in inner cities also are underserved in terms of health care resources.
Yeah.
A lot of times they don't have the mobility to get to doctor's appointments when they need to.
Mm-hmm,
they can't afford it. They need to have a family member take a day off work to transport them, and so on. So, you know, the problem is kind of universal. There's a lot of people who are affected by all this. One of the most interesting developments out of many, but one of the things I find particularly interesting is the increase of remote patient monitoring.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know, we're wearing Fitbits. We're, you know, got different things that we can use. That's being expanded so that physicians will be able to monitor your vital signs remotely while you're at home, while you're at work doing, you don't have to interrupt to come in and just get that snapshot reading.
Yes.
So it's a lot more information and it's much more valuable in terms of diagnosing and tracking the condition of a patient.
Yeah. I have some, I asked my niece some questions. She has she went through a long bout of tachycardia. And so she had a monitor, which she wore, and she had it connected up to the Bluetooth on her phone, and that sent all of the information off to the doctor on a regular basis. And so, it's exciting versus, you know, what we go back maybe 10 years, maybe I don't know when the cutoff was, but I'll say 10 years ago. You would have to go on in, you'd have to sit in the hospital and they would monitor you for 3 days, 4 days, whatever it was for these events. And now it's,
Yeah, actually back then they did have a device that you could wear.
Yeah.
And it was a cassette tape.
Okay.
And it was just totally, because I had to wear this. I have an arrhythmia. And so totally awkward to wear all the time. And then you take it in and then they have to set the tape out for analysis and, you know, to pull data off of it.
Yeah.
So it's much more immediate. Another area that I don't think a lot of people are thinking about, and that's aging in place, elderly who want to stay living in their own home. This same remote monitoring does fall detection. Are they running a fever? One of the big ones is, are they moving differently than they used to? Is it taking longer for them to get, you know, are they going into the kitchen? Are they eating? So that's a lot of this data helps relieve the burden from the caregiver, most of whom are unpaid, you know, family members or friends, and makes their life much easier, but it's much safer for the elderly person as well.
Where do you see us going in the future with this? How exciting can this get?
So one of my favorite things that I love to say is that wearable technology will take off when it disappears.
Okay.
And by that, I mean, you know, remember the old Timex watch? You mm-hmm. put it on and then, you know, every year or two, you put a new battery in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
You didn't have to think about it. You didn't have to take it off and charge it at night. So for me, these devices, and one of the fascinating things is a lot of the stuff for like monitoring the elderly, they don't have to wear anything. Mm-hmm. You can just have things in the home that can monitor them, and not necessarily cameras. You know, a lot of people don't want a camera. So they're non-contact tools that people can use for this, which is, I think, very exciting.
Very cool. Yeah. Any thoughts? We've got just a little bit left. Any thoughts on the new stuff from Apple and the Apple Watch?
I think that Apple gets out over their skis a lot
yeah.
with some of their health
okay.
with some of their health claims, and I'll leave it at that.
Okay, and that actually is a fair assessment there. They've been having a little pushback from people on that the pulse ox detection and stuff like that. So I can understand that. Hey, would you give out a website where people can find out more information in regards to you, Alfred Poor, the health tech futurist?
Sure. If you want to find out more about my keynote speaking and some of the things that I can cover for your event, it's alfredpoor.com. Very simple. Alfredpoor.com.
Very basic. I love it. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
Hey guys, this is Benny Rockwell. Most of us use video cameras nowadays, but what about those old movie films in the back of your closet? Well, let me tell you about Legacy Digital Productions. They specialize in taking your old memories on film, videotape, and slides and digitizing them to DVDs. Imagine grandpa's old 8mm and 16mm films that are just sitting in a box getting old and fading away. Legacy Digital will clean and recondition those films, capture them digitally frame by frame, and then produce beautiful DVDs of your precious memories on long-lasting archive-quality discs. They don't use a projector, and your films can't be damaged in the process, the best available for families like yours. The final results are gorgeous. What better way to preserve those precious memories for future generations? Call right now, mention my name, Benny Rockwell, and receive a 30% discount on your order. Call toll-free 1-866-2-LEGACY. That's 1-866-2-LEGACY, 1-866-253-4229. And tell them Benny sent you. Your memories are priceless, so call 866-2-LEGACY now.
This is Benjamin Rockwell, and now it's time to get down to business. This is where we talk about computers, the workplace, and how that all intertwines. Renee reached out, and she was asking, my company is talking about layoffs, and it's pretty clear that they're not investing in sending anyone for upskilling, for more training. I don't want to just wait around and hope I'm safe. What can I do on my own to stay employable, or better yet, get ahead of the curve? All right, and I get this. You know, we can't stop the weather, but, you know, you can grab an umbrella. You can plan your route and make sure that you don't get drenched. When a company signals downsizing, it's really this time for you to reflect and to start thinking about depending on yourself rather than on them. So you do need to start off with that awareness, not panicking. You just need to go through a number of different things. You want to assess your current strengths and weaknesses. In Renee's case, she's in the tech field, and that is a big thing. So she needs to look through and see what skills might be outdated. If your tech or business skills haven't evolved in 3 to 5 years, you've got to modernize. And you should be looking at all of the job listings that are out there on LinkedIn and wherever else that allow you to spot the recurring requirements, and you use that as the roadmap. And this is going to vary for everybody. You're also going to think about things that are adjacent to what you do. Can I pivot in a direction off to the left or right that is going to give me a different approach to things? So you want to think about all of the transferable and durable skills. All right, you've got a number of different things that are going to be coming up in all of these. You've got critical thinking, data literacy, cloud familiarity, and automation awareness. These are all going to show up across a number of industries. Now, you don't want to chase those buzzwords, but you want to see what's going to give you that different direction or the same direction. And you're going to want to choose skills that are going to travel with you from one job or one role to another. Next up, you've got to pick that focus area that aligns with where your desired industry is heading. In Renee's case, she's in IT. So a lot of areas like cybersecurity, AI tools, cloud services, or data management are high demand and they're still growing. Those in the non-tech field might consider digital productivity, project management, or workflow automation. These are skills that help companies do more with less. So that next step, and a lot of the conversation that I had with Renee was about the training and where to go for that. And you need to always reflect on what are the efficient opportunities for learning out there. And there's a number of different things, Coursera, edX, and LinkedIn Learning. They all offer a variety of courses that are university-backed, and they're going to be free or cheap. And this is really going to be a lot of high efficiency for you, a matter of going through and getting high quality, yet at a low cost. And you can go through and you can check for hands-on examples and walkthroughs through places like YouTube or GitHub. Next up, you want to be thinking about building something that is tangible. You don't want to just go on out and collect all of these certificates. You want to apply all of your learning to projects or portfolio pieces that show results. You want to look for what you're going to be doing until you get your next job. So work for a nonprofit organization. Do some database work for your church or wherever. You want to really continue to build your resume up with these different little items that you can put in with your resume or as addendums saying, hey, yeah, I was out of work for the last 6 months, but I did complete this project over here. I did this thing over there. And I will tell you that if you can provide proof of ability, that is going to be a lot more than proof of attendance. So you want to leverage what you learned in those classes into practical items. Along the way, you're also going to need to network. You want to join online communities, LinkedIn groups, and local meetups that are tied towards your chosen skills. A lot of those job leads that you're going to get along the way are going to come from peers who know that you're leveling up. It's not going to be from recruiters who are doing this automated scanning of resumes. This is an area which has completely fallen apart. And that is going to be a key thing. Of course, I don't want you to rest on your laurels. You do still need to keep your resume and your LinkedIn profile up to date. You want to highlight a lot of that ongoing learning and adaptability. You're going to also document every one of your work accomplishments now while you still have access to them. They're going to form the backbone of your job hunt later on. All along through all of this, you need to treat all of your new skills as you bring these aboard like a side hustle. And what does that mean? That means you need to dedicate consistent time every week, even if it's just a couple of hours a day, a couple of hours a week. This is something that you need to be working on. Look, I know layoffs are unnerving, but they also create opportunity for those who prepare, for those who are seeking to grow. And that is going to be probably the best focus you can give. This is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. I'll be back with more in just a moment. Years ago, I found a web hosting company that fit my needs as a computer nerd, as a radio show host, and, well, a normal person. Recently, though, it became clear to me that it was time to upgrade. I had a choice between my old plan and the new one at 7 times the cost. It was that awkward point where I could choose between a sip of water or being dunked in a pool. I searched around, comparing the many options for someone like me. After looking for 3 weeks, there it was, site ground. In proper fashion, I tested their customer service, their knowledge, and their care, their willingness to do things the right way. The site ground salesman made sure that I didn't overbuy and get a 50-gallon bucket when all I needed was a 1-gallon bucket. The folks at SiteGround know WordPress, Joomla, and more. SiteGround.com, S-I-T-E, ground.com, for your web hosting needs. SiteGround. Holly's question in a nutshell: why are some websites slow on my work laptop but fast on my home computer over the same connection? And to be clear, I bounced a couple of things back and forth. She works from home. So this is where we need to start looking at her particular problem. But this really applies to everybody. And I get it. I mean, this is like walking through check-in security at one airport. It takes forever, while another one lets you walk straight through. So we've talked about VPNs in the past, and your company laptop is going to have additional security layers. They're going to have this virtual private network most of the time. They've got firewalls. They've also got various bits of monitoring, and this is all going to add a little bit of latency for each different layer that they put in here. All of these different security layers are there to protect the company, not necessarily make things easier for you. So this is going to start to explain the difference. When your computer, your Windows machine that you might have right next to that laptop, you're utilizing the same internet connection, your information on the work laptop is going to go, let's say, halfway across the country to your corporate offices. It's going to get processed a number of different ways by your company systems before it goes out to the internet and then comes on back. Now, they're supposed to be better than this. Over the course of time, everybody should be allotting the amount of resources that are needed for you to be able to speed through the internet just as fast as you would at home. But it's not always that case. Now, we also have situations like group policy settings that may force routing through specific proxy servers. That'll add a delay. You may have corporate antivirus or endpoint protection that may be scanning the web content a lot differently than your antivirus on your own home PC. I trust you do have something like that, and that is a key thing there. There is something else, and this is DNS resolution, domain name services. And when you are sending your information on out to your work system, through your work system to your corporate offices, they may have a different setup of DNS where they look first and say, oh, this should be going to internal services versus going on out to the internet. And that is a different set of processing that all has to happen there. And we don't have that at home. Last up, there's a lot of other things that can be going on because you may have smaller pipes going into your business than you do direct to the internet. And the background sync of any business applications, any cloud storage, any kind of other thing that's going on with the office may actually be consuming all of the bandwidth that they can afford to you as an individual on a group of 100, 200, 1,000 other workers for the same company. And that's going to throw things off as well. As for now, this is Benjamin Rockwell. You're listening to Computer Talk Radio. We'll catch you next week.
Let me tell you about The Radio Factory, an exciting new venue for talk radio. It's the internet, the wave of the present. My name is Benjamin Rockwell, and I'm the host of a syndicated radio program, Computer Talk Radio, so I know the internet is here and now. Many of the hosts at theradiofactory.com have their own podcasts or radio shows across the country, but many people like the comfort of listening to their own special radio show at a specific time and day, much like we watch live television. The internet, as you're probably aware, is a powerful tool that allows The Radio Factory to deliver unique programming with far more variety than the windbags who are simply about contriving up viewpoints to get you riled up. Additionally, you'll find that many of the programs are shorter, giving more information in less time. Stick with theradiofactory.com and see how it evolves to keep you entertained, interested, informed, and above all, intelligent. After all, the Radio Factory motto is building your intelligence one talk show at a time. Theradiofactory.com.